I've been reading this same newspaper for the last 6 days. I'm now on the Sunday business section, the last section. Hallelujah. To be fair and honest, I didn't read every word of every other section. I read most of the front page articles. This took all of last Sunday and most of Monday. Those columns are dense and labor-intensive, and are generally national and international-scale stories of misery, corruption, ruin, and political finger-pointing. I feel informed after completing these pages, but not necessarily better off for the effort. I skipped the sports section entirely. I'm not at all interested in the NFL, NHL, NBA, and whatever. I never have been. I've never read the sports pages, and I'm not about to start now for the sake of some type A need to prove that I can read the whole Sunday paper. I also skipped the book reviews, since the newspaper is challenging enough, and style, since I'm relegated to elastic waist pants and mules. Pre-accident me is shaking her head in disapproval, wagging her index finger and calling me a slacker. But post-accident me tells her in a firm and not open for discussion voice to lighten up and shush. Life may not be too short to read the entire Sunday New York Times, but the week certainly is. At least it is for me. Skip, skip, and skip. The business section is by far my favorite, and not just because it's the last one. Because Berkeley consultants service every industry in pretty much every developed nation, most columns in this section are relevant in some way to a past, present, or future Berkeley case. Almost every article is a delicious taste of the juicy, salty, bittersweet corporate world I used to inhabit and love. Wall Street, trade with China, the auto industry, big pharma, fuel cell technology, market shares, mergers and acquisitions, profits, losses, IPOs. The business section feels like home. And probably because I love the content, I find it the easiest section to read. Huh. I look up at my shiny new skis. Maybe there is something to Bob's ski therapy theory, that healing and normal functioning might come more readily from immersing myself in doing something that I love to do, rather than dutifully going through the motions of some meaningless, emotionally void task. I know you're dying to go, but I need some time, I say to my skis. I swear they look disappointed. I have noticed that I can now read every word on the page, and this exciting development isn't limited to the business section. In addition to the red, vertical, left margin bookmark that I brought home with me from Baldwin, I now use a second bookmark, a regular white cardboard one from Wellmont Books, held horizontally beneath the line of text that I'm reading. When I reach the end of the line, I scan left across the words I just read until I hit red. Then I slide the white bookmark down and begin reading the next line. I feel like I'm the register of a typewriter when I do this, and I even play that ding in my head each time I return to the left and move down. Without the horizontal bookmark, I often got hopelessly lost on the page as I worked to return to the left margin. I would get to the red bookmark, but like a weak swimmer aiming to cut a straight line across a strong ocean current, my focus drifted up or down along the way. Sometimes whole paragraphs from the words I'd just read. And I always knew when I was somewhere north or south of my intended destination, because the sentence I was reading would suddenly become a nonsensical mad lib. The additional bookmark keeps me in line. Interestingly, the idea to use this second bookmark didn't come from Martha or Heidi or Bob or any of my outpatient therapists. It came from Charlie. This is how he reads, and now it's how we read. Using this technique, I'd consider my reading accuracy and therefore comprehension back to normal, which is incredibly fantastic news. It's so incredibly fantastic, in fact, that I should be jumping up and down, metaphorically, of course, and calling Richard to let him know that I've recovered and am ready to return to work. But I haven't told anyone about my incredibly fantastic news yet, not even Bob. I don't understand the reason for my own uncharacteristic secrecy. I think it's because I know I'm still not ready. My reading pace is still much, much slower than it was. And where I used to skim, I don't dare to now. I read every word, which is great for accuracy, but lethal for efficiency. Read, scan, ding, down, read. It works, but it's a tedious process, and I'd never be able to keep up with Berkeley's daily volume of email and paperwork at that rate. My job is already 70 to 80 hours a week, flat out. There isn't room for slower. so it would be premature to announce my return, wise to keep quiet. But the real reason I'm hesitant to reveal my reading recovery to the world doesn't feel like it stems from responsible caution or a fear that I'll never pick up the pace. And it's certainly not because I'm modest or have a need for privacy. In fact, I usually brag quite shamelessly about my successes, to a level bordering intolerable, especially to Bob, who is always proud to hear them. But I don't want to tell anyone, and until I do, I'm respecting my instincts and keeping my incredibly fantastic news to myself. I finish the business section and turn to the last page of the newspaper. Done. Well, except for the sports and style and the book review. Shush. Hardly something to celebrate. Shush. It took you 7 days. You should be able to read it in a single morning. Shush, shush, shush. I banish pre-accident me from my mind and insist instead of basking in the glory of this moment. I'm in Vermont. The sun is shining. The house is quiet. And I finished the Sunday New York Times. I smile at my skis, looking to share my accomplishment with someone. I swear they smile back. The only thing missing from this moment is a hot coffee. Where is my mother? She should be back by now. Feeling unable to wait one more minute for some form of caffeine and boosted with confidence from my reading prowess, I decide to walk over to the refrigerator for a Diet Coke. If Bob thinks I'm ready to ski down 2,000 vertical feet of trails, then I should be able to walk a few horizontal feet into the kitchen, right? I take hold of Granny, and the two of us hobble the few steps over from the dining table to the fridge. I find the door handle, which is on the left and not even bandaged with brightly colored tape. So far, so good. I let go of Granny and lunge for the handle. Got it. I pull the door open, but I'm standing square in front of the refrigerator, so I only succeed at banging the door into myself. I push the door shut. I've got to step out of the way first. To the left. Using the door handle as a grab bar, I shuffle myself sideways enough to give the door clearance, and I pull again. But here's the important difference between hospital grab bars and refrigerator handles. Grab bars don't move. I can lean, teeter, push, and pull with all my weight, and that grab bar, like Bob in most arguments, won't budge an inch. Not so for a refrigerator door handle once the door is open. I realize this is an obvious fact, but it's one I never physically relied on before, and so I didn't consider the significance of this before I pulled.